Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
This is part two, Fred, of our program on Hawaii's Kilauea volcanic eruption and the hotspot hypothesis of how that island chain allegedly formed.
Yes, we're finally getting to hotspots. I've been excited about this show because I mentioned, I think, maybe three shows ago that when I went on assignment to Hawaii,
right,
that several guys at work mentioned the hotspot. Oh, yeah, that's where that hotspot is, millions of years old. And, you know, I wasn't real super familiar with the arguments for the hotspot. And so this show is going to really get into that, and it's super interesting.
Yes, and I know we do want to summarize last week's show, but we're first going to listen to audio about hotspots from a YouTube video. Maybe later in the show we'll do another video or so. And the claim that a hotspot produced even the current eruption. So this is going to be interesting. Now, mainstream science reporters, like you might hear on Fox News, USA Today, and they give you the ninth grade version of the original hotspot hypothesis, but you get caveats and qualifications from more careful presentations, but there are all kinds of problems that they're trying to deal with.
Yeah, and I can't wait to get into those. But let's look at Scientific American in 2015 in an article.
Recent
article in 2015 on molten mechanics of the inner Earth. They wrote, geologists have debated the cause of these so-called hotspots for decades. They've debated these for decades. They go on to say, do they originate in mantle plumes, vast upwellings of super hot rock from the Earth's core, or in shallower reservoirs of heat in the upper mantle?
So that's a recent article that has this admission of this longstanding disagreement for how all this supposedly happens. Fred, we'll see in a little bit from one of the world's leading experts on volcanoes that they don't even know how magma forms. They don't even know where that comes from. But in this video, by the way, you'll hear the word magmatic. And that's for magma, abundant magmatic activity. He's not saying magnetic activity, but magmatic for
magmatic.
So here we go.
The Hawaiian Islands owe their existence to a feature called a hotspot. The term hotspot generally means an area marked by abundant magmatic activity, like Hawaii or Yellowstone. It was long thought that a hot stream of material, possibly originating at the Earth's core, streamed up through the mantle to the lithosphere, triggering volcanism. It was also thought that hot spots provided fixed reference points, with the lithosphere simply moving over the top. It now appears that hot spots need not be perfectly fixed, and they're probably not fed from below. Instead, they're thought to be volumes of mantle where abundant melting occurs, producing magma that rises through the lithosphere and produces magmatic activity in and on the crust. This leaves a trail of progressively older volcanoes leading away from the volcanically active region. Because of the old picture of what a hotspot was thought to be, some scientists now prefer the terms melting anomaly or even wet spot. The Hawaiian hotspot has existed for at least 80 million years, leaving in its wake a long string of islands and submerged volcanoes called seamounts, extending all the way to the Aleutian Trench. Today, volcanism extends from Haleakala Volcano on Maui across the Big Island to an undersea volcano named Lu'ihi.
Lu'ihi. So let's grab just another 20 seconds or so from that same video.
Because the Pacific Plate moves about 10 centimeters per year, each area will remain over the hotspot for about a million years. This means that the Hawaiian Islands to the northwest are progressively older. Midway Island, of World War II fame, formed 50 million years before these brand new lava flows on the Big Island.
Okay, so now before we talk through that, Fred, let's discuss the comments from last week's program.
Yeah, so our listeners really appreciated three things. The National Park Ranger we had in studio.
Oh, boy,
what a treat that was.
Yeah.
The counterexample of the island of Surtsey. We've talked about that before.
Off the coast of Iceland.
Awesome. And the rebuttal to uniformitarianism by comparing this current eruption, large by modern standards, but minuscule when compared to the past.
Yeah, so the first two, Mark Tanaka Sanders, how awesome it is to have a chief ranger from one of Hawaii's two national parks that are volcanic. He was the chief ranger for many years at Haleakala on Maui. And then we talked about Surtsey, where you have leading geologists and science outlets admitting that this island that we saw birth only 55 years ago, it was born on November 14th, 1963.
I don't know if I should admit this, but I'm older than that island.
You are, Fred. Well, so am I. I was born January 10th, 1959. When were you born?
In 61.
61. So I got a little bit on you.
Yeah.
But this island, it has many surface features that we described last week that geologists are taught would require tens of thousands or even millions of years to form. That's what their textbooks say. And Iceland's chief geologist said, well, it only took a few months, really, a few years,
exactly.
A few decades, and there it all is. So the third thing that listeners have talked to us about or emailed is that they appreciated the test of uniformitarianism that compared the current eruption in Hawaii, which is the largest in recent history, with the massive eruptions of Earth's older past.
But wait, isn't uniformitarianism supposed to be things progress today as they did in the past?
It sure is.
So that right there alone just totally blows that out of the water.
Yeah, so right. Comparing the current eruption, Kilauea 2018, to previous recent Hawaiian eruptions, USA Today headline, Kilauea volcano eruption is one of the biggest in recent Hawaii history. And they quote a USGS, that's the U.S. Geological Survey volcanologist.
And she said it's far more lava than we've witnessed in recent history.
Yeah, and they list the big Kilauea eruptions in 1955, 1960, and it's even bigger than the Mauna Loa eruption of 1984. Well, this current eruption, if you look at the amount of magma that's been produced, it's about a tenth of a cubic mile. So that's more ejecta, including more lava, than even Mauna Loa did, which was also on the Big Island, but it was in the center of the Big Island.
Yeah. And when I was reading Answers in Genesis, Dr. Snelling, he said that
geologist,
he said that if you took all the lava that has been produced by this island chain, that secular scientists say it would be the equivalent of the entire state of California, 1 mile thick.
Wow.
Of lava. But yet things don't change. Things today progress as they did in the past.
Wow, that is astounding. Now, Hawaii's largest recent eruptions are minuscule, as are the world's other more recent eruptions compared to the lava fields produced earlier in Earth's history. And let's give a quick rundown, Fred, of the comparisons. Doug McBurney on the air on Monday, my co-host, he gave us constructive criticism, Fred. He said he enjoyed the show, but comparing millions and billions and trillions of cubic meters to this eruption was too confusing. He said, why not convert it to
cubic miles? Yeah, that makes sense.
So, Doug, great idea. So we did that. And if you think about like Mount Pinatubo, 1991, the USGS calculates Pinatubo at about 1 cubic mile of magma. So 1 cubic mile, that's a lot less than some of the ones we're going to mention that are thousands of cubic
miles. Yeah, I'll take that and I'll raise that by three.
All right.
So the Alaskan's massive 1912 eruption, it produced 3 cubic miles of lava, and that's 30 times more than Mount St. Helens, by the way.
Wow, so 3 cubic miles. Hey, that's less than millions of cubic miles that we're going to describe in
yeah.
previous eruptions in Earth's earlier history. How about Krakatoa? You remember that eruption hearing? I mean, you weren't old enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember. I wasn't there, but yeah, I remember us talking about it.
Sure. 1883, 6 cubic miles. And that was a loud one. Krakatoa, what a great name for a volcano.
So we've gone from 1 to 3 to 6, and now Tambora in 1815, which killed 90,000 Indonesians.
So tragic.
And that's the deadliest volcanic eruption that we know of.
Yeah, and that put out about a dozen square miles of magma, that's liquid rock, and about 20 cubic miles of ash and other ejecta. So that's the largest recorded in the last 5,000 years, about 36 cubic miles. But again, Fred, that's less than thousands, and it's less than millions of cubic miles that we'll describe from the ancient past of the Earth, which is really only thousands of years, not billions.
Yeah. Well, you know, so we mentioned this one was the deadliest volcano of all time, but you're going to Italy,
yes,
and you're going to be visiting Mount Vesuvius, and a lot of people know that particular story.
Yes, that's right. It erupted in 79 AD. And it destroyed the city of Pompeii. So when we go to Pompeii, Fred, what we'll see on our Bible tour of Italy, we're flying out of New York City, by the way, to Rome on October 1st. Hopefully, some folks in the audience could still join us. Just go to rsr.org/Italy. My son, Dominic, Cheryl, and I are thrilled that Dominic is coming. He's worked here at the studio for years,
yeah,
and he's, what, 17 years yep. old. What a neat son, plays hockey, homeschooling, and he works. So, and he's paying for a good part of his trip. But Fred, when we see Pompeii, this is where more than 10,000 people were killed. You have an ancient city of the Roman Empire that's basically frozen in time.
Yeah.
And you can see what it was like when the Apostle Paul walked through and he evangelized these ancient cities. So it'll be awesome to go there, but Vesuvius eruption, though it was so deadly, it produced only about a cubic mile, 1 mile of ejecta, far more ash than magma, I think, and we'll learn more about Vesuvius when we get there. So what's the point of all this?
So whether it's Pinatubo or Krakatoa or Vesuvius or even Tambora or today's Kilauea, the eruptions of the last 5,000 years of Earth's history are dwarfed by those of that came before. So today is not like the past.
Yeah, it's not. We mentioned Yellowstone, but Doug said put it in cubic miles. So the Yellowstone eruption was 600 cubic miles. That's more than a tenth of a cubic mile. Then there's the Colorado San Juan volcanic field. And we mentioned that among many others. That was 1,200 cubic miles, Fred. 1,200, that's a lot more than Tambora's 36 cubic miles. Then in Brazil, remember we talked about the Guarapuava lava field?
Say that 10 times.
Guarapuava. In cubic miles, that's more than 2,000 cubic miles.
2,000 cubic miles.
So we're all worked up about Kilauea, and reasonably so. But again, that's only a tenth of a cubic mile compared to 2,060 cubic miles. And then in India, we talked about the Deccan Traps, 300,000 cubic miles.
Wait a minute. So we've gone from 2,000 to 300,000.
300,000.
Wow.
And so that's orders of magnitude more than the 36 cubic miles of the Tambora eruption.
But wait a minute. There's another one on here that we talked about.
In the South Pacific, the Java Plateau, the Antong Java Plateau, which is
19 million cubic miles of magma.
19 million cubic. Wow.
It's so, like that illustration of stars as you go out farther in space and how they get
bigger and bigger. So these contrasts, they're just enormous. And when you compare the recent relatively tiny eruptions to these enormous ones of the more distant past, then you see that they undermine the doctrine of uniformitarianism.
Yeah, so let's repeat that. Today is not like the past.
Yes.
It is not.
Yeah, these lava comparisons, they disprove that claim. There's nothing in modern Indonesia, Italy, or Hawaii, for example, that correlates to the far more massive lava flows of the past. And we only mentioned a few of them in cubic miles. There's tons of them. There's nothing like it. So now, Fred, to Hawaii's hotspot hypothesis.
Yeah, and news reporters have relentlessly presented to millions of readers and viewers since May 3rd, you know, this eruption in Hawaii, this whole hotspot thing.
That they know how it formed. Now, back in the 1960s, there was a famous Canadian geologist. I think we have to blame the Canadians for this one, even though we have so many listeners there. His name is Tuzo Wilson. And Tuzo, by the way, Walt Brown met him. He met so many of the world's most famous scientists in the 20th century. But Tuzo Wilson proposed that the Hawaiian Islands were created over what he called a hot spot in the Pacific. And a hot spot occurs, he claimed, because of the intense heat of the Earth's core. In fact, the outer core.
Yeah, and that's beneath the mantle. So we're talking about inside the Earth and really, really hot and magma.
Magma in that it's liquid, right?
The liquid.
Outer core. Yep. The inner core is solid, crystalline. The outer core is liquid. It's magma. And this heat, Tuzo claimed, Tuzo Wilson, it radiates all the way up through the mantle to the surface. So it moves upward to the crust. And these areas of rising hot rock are called mantle plumes.
Yeah. So in Walt Brown's book, In the Beginning, which we have many copies here. And
yes, many cases of.
Yes. You can go to rsr.org and click on the store. It's the best creation book.
Oh, it's awesome. And Fred, we've just decided, since we got an entire pallet shipped to our RSR studios. In fact, I should put a photo on today's show summary of cases of In the Beginning. So if anyone wants an entire case to give as gifts to friends, to people you want to bring to the Lord who are science-oriented, for $100, we will ship to you a case of 8 books of In the Beginning, and we're not charging shipping.
Wow.
So that's $100
awesome.
For 8 books. It's hardcover, full color, gorgeous.
Yeah, and we have to repeat, it's your and mine's favorite creation book.
Yes.
It was our favorite creation book before I think we even met years
from
ago.
From long, long ago.
Because his book, which edition is he on now?
The 8th edition, this is.
Yeah, I think it was the 3rd edition when I first got a hold of that
just
book.
Just awesome.
Yeah, it's so great.
So Walt Brown, in his book In the Beginning, he discusses the hotspot hypothesis, and he points out that the original concept is now widely discredited, even by geologists.
And what's great about his book is he always provides footnote references. He keeps things nice and summarized, and you can always go and get the details, and he'll provide the footnotes.
Yes, and I've read all the footnotes. There are over 1,000 of them.
Oh, wow.
And
most of them are from secular sources.
Vast majority are mainstream, peer-reviewed, secular, atheistic science journals, and so on. So even though it has been discredited, it was used to popularize plate tectonics, that these fixed hotspots supposedly existed inside the Earth. And so now that the hotspot hypothesis has been discredited, and it's all mangled from what it originally was, Fred, they never went back and said, well, maybe we shouldn't have given that much credit to plate tectonics, because the theory used to popularize it turns out it's not valid. Well, supposedly, plumes of hot melted, some solid rock continually rise from the Earth's core upward through the mantle.
Yeah, then over supposed millions of years, as the plate somehow slid over the hot spot, the plate melted along a line and produced volcanoes and flood basalts.
Yeah, so you see a line of volcanic islands, right, in Hawaii.
So they go all the way up to basically Alaska, right?
Yes.
But the ones that go to Alaska are submerged.
But if the mantle is circulating, which is a major part of plate tectonics, I mean, if you think about the Earth, the crust, the mantle, and then the core, the mantle is, what, like 1,800 miles deep. And why would the plates, the crustal plates that sit on top of the mantle, why would they move? Well, the claim is that the mantle circulates. Now, it's not true. The mantle does not circulate.
No.
We'll get to that later.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the claim. The mantle circulates. So Think about it. If the mantle circulates, why would the hotspot be fixed? I mean, the theory was broken from the beginning. But when you have a worldview that is wrong, you're going to desperately try to make up stories that explain what we see, but they're all going to be wrong.
Yeah. A lot of it's self-contradictory.
Yeah. So let's look at how widespread this idea still is, even though, like so many of the discredited icons of evolution.
Yeah, that take decades and even centuries to get, you know, right. to get right.
Right. They still are in the textbooks, even though mainstream evolutionists and other scientists have falsified them years ago. Well, that's going on with this hotspot hypothesis. It's still in the college textbooks. Of course, it's still in the high school textbooks. And let's look at a quote from the American Geosciences Institute about this. Now, that's a consortium. They've got 50 mainstream geology and geophysics organizations. Mm-hmm. And there's an article on their website titled "The Question of Mantle Plumes."
The question. Okay, so they admit this, and I quote, "Despite the debate, Morgan's hypothesis in nearly its original form has become entrenched in undergraduate and high school curricula."
So entrenched, right? And by the way, if you are getting a science article from, say, Fox News or USA Today or wherever, time and again, it seems that the level of the typical science reporter is at like ninth grade level. And even if there are dozens or even hundreds of peer-reviewed papers contradicting mm-hmm. that silly old iconic story, you still get the silly old story.
Yeah, it's so bad because all the major networks, including Fox News,
fake news.
Yeah.
When it comes to science.
Yeah, fake science.
And
sure.
abortion and homosexuality.
Yep. Yeah. So many things.
So anyway, let's continue with this quote from the American Geosciences Institute. They say, "Although the elegant explanation often demonstrated with common household items like a pencil or a candle being used to punch or burn through a moving piece of paper," right? So you can picture plate tectonics, the paper's the plate, you take the pencil and you shove it up through, you shove it through and you move the thing and your kids say, "Wow, look at that, it moved."
That's neat. That must be true.
Right, it must be true. So they're saying, look, this was all cute, it sounded elegant, but it is now entrenched in our college textbooks, even though the difficulties, and they're being nice there, of confirming that hypothesis is always excluded from the books.
Yeah, that's right. They go on to say, "The difficulties of confirming such a hypothesis and the intricacies of the ongoing debate are rarely included in the lesson."
Yeah, so, you know, as Walt Brown points out, and as the rest of our show, Fred, is basically a book review from in the beginning on this topic of the Hawaiian hotspots. Walt points out that the Hawaiian Islands were considered the best example of this. Mm-hmm. But what was not explained were all the volcanoes that you couldn't see. In other words, there are thousands of volcanoes below the surface, the sea level. You can't see those. So of the ones you can see, you see this little argument, look at this line of volcanoes, and that was formed over a hotspot as the plates moved.
Yeah. So this is before they can see what's underneath the ocean surface.
Yeah, which now is very well documented, including the scientist who worked with the U.S. Navy to really do the major mapping of the ocean floors. He's put out a book, Fred, claiming that plate tectonics is completely false. And he points out that while the theory was developed, the scientist had almost no idea what was on the ocean floor, because the maps we were creating were all classified, because we didn't want the Russians to find out what we knew about the ocean floors.
Yep.
So what a good point, right? That the theory was presented before we really knew what was going on down there. So, Fred, this U.S. Navy scientist, his name was Smoot, S-M-O-O-T, and he concludes, his book came out in 2012, he concludes that subduction does not occur, seafloor spreading does not occur. And so, of course, we've talked all about these topics, including with interviews with Walt Brown. But here's a question about the hotspot hypothesis. How could two radio guys and a creation scientist like Walt Brown, how could we be trusted, Fred, when we claim that the evidence below the ocean waters disproved the whole story? Because as Walt points out in his book, you could see the Hawaiian Island chain and other chains. What they don't tell you about is the submarine volcanoes, long chains of volcanoes that intersect the Hawaiian chain and sometimes at very large angles. So in other words, the plates would have to be going in two directions at the same time.
So how can we make that claim? Well, you've heard of the journal Nature, right?
The journal
Creation
Nature. Oh, only the world's number one most prestigious science journal. Atheistic
science in quotes, in my opinion. Yes. But anyways, they had a paper titled "Fixed Hotspots Gone with the Wind." And they say that it seems that we must abandon the convenient concept of fixed hotspots as reference points for past plate motions.
So we must abandon the hotspots as a convenient concept. Yeah, that was in 1998. We will list a number of papers as we continue, and they'll span the decades, many of them from the 2000s. But Fred, it's now rather widely recognized that if hotspots do exist, they must move. And that radically changes the whole claim, and it undermines the initial argument used to popularize it.
Yep. And I like what Walt points out, is that other volcanic chains, such as the Bermuda Rise, are almost perpendicular to the claimed movements of the plates. So it's like how much of a wrong can you get?
Yeah.
I mean,
you can't get more wrong
exactly
in this case than perpendicular, right? The plate's moving this way and the volcanic island chain, the Bermuda Rise, is going that way. So now let's jump ahead to the big picture, because we're going to give a lot of details coming up. But how much guesswork is going on in geology and in volcanology? How much bluffing and bluster? Now, consider this quote from a 1970s book called, appropriately so,
Volcanoes.
Volcanoes, right? Published by Prentice Hall. Get this, quote, "The question of where the magma comes from and how it is generated are the most speculative in all of volcanology."
Wow.
The most speculative. Where did the melted rock come from?
Yeah, the where and the how is
that
all
is
speculative.
So awesome. Now, that was written by Gordon MacDonald, one of the world's leading volcanologists. He got his degree from Berkeley. That's a hotbed of young earth creationism, right? And after a stint with the USGS, he spent decades in Hawaii with the Hawaii Institute of Geophysics at the University of Hawaii. So he spent his lifetime trying to understand volcanoes. Now, I mentioned Fox News, Fred, the fake news from Fox News. If you listen to Ira Flatow on NPR's Science Friday, you remember
that show.
We know
that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that guy. Or Nova, or the Discovery Channel, or the BBC, right? And they're reporting on the Kilauea eruption. Do you think you're going to hear from one of the world's pioneers in volcanology, the question of where magma comes from is among the most speculative in all of volcanology?
Yeah, you're not going to get that quote. You're not going to hear it. They're going to keep pushing this whole story about the hotspot.
Like we understand it. And you're not going to hear it from your community college geology instructor either. Like Red Rocks. One of our sons just took a geology course up at Red Rocks. They never said this.
Yeah. And a lot of these science, they got a lot of these professors, you would think, hey, they're professors of geology.
Yeah.
If they're not doing their homework, a lot of them got to know this. They just don't want to present the truth.
Well, that certainly could be. And also, they could be uneducated. You know,
we know that's happened too.
Selection bias, only reading what will affirm what you already believe.
Yeah, really good
Whereas,
point.
Whereas, if you are a creation scientist, by far, and our listeners can tell,
and
just
I know
from
what
the
you're
shows
say.
We do.
Yep.
Overwhelmingly, we read more of the secular writing, the papers, the books, than we do of the creation writing.
Yeah.
Overwhelmingly.
Yep.
So we do know both sides.
Yeah, we do. And we know that when we publish something or we write an article, we want evolutionists to read it because they're going to be so dogmatic about proving it wrong. It's the best way to vet anything you write.
Oh, we have a whole team of volunteer atheist fact checkers that have been working for BEL for like 27 years now.
Yeah, thank you,
really
all you guys.
Been awesome.
Yeah.
And for RSR. So why does he say, why would this world's leading expert on volcanoes say that we have no idea where magma comes from? Why would he say that?
Yeah.
Well, he believes that the
Earth. How it's generated.
Yeah. He believes the Earth is 4.6 billion years old. And as we've said like 1,000 times over, then the Earth should be way more stable by now.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't have such unequal temperature variations throughout the crust and the mantle. And even the heat that does come from radioactive decay. We've talked about this. We had Lawrence Krauss, world-renowned physicist on this show, got in big trouble with the Me Too movement.
Yep, I heard about that.
And so did up at Montana State University, Museum of the Rockies.
Horner, Jack Horner.
Jack Horner, he's out. And Lawrence Krauss, last I heard, he's out from two universities. He's not allowed back on campus. So maybe there might have been an update recently, but that's last I heard. So anyway, even Lawrence Krauss admitted to the point that I made in that debate that Earth's radioactivity, 90% of it is in the crust, in the crust of the Earth. And even then, it's preferentially near granite. It's in the continental crust.
Yeah. We've got a great show on that, by the way.
Yeah. So good. RSR.org/Krauss. K-R-A-U-S-S.
What about RSR.org/radioactivity? I bet you've done that.
That's the best.
Okay. I knew it.
Yes. You're right. That's a phenomenal show. So at any rate, the heat of the Earth, it should all have evened out by now in 4.5 billion years. And it's not. So that's one reason why a world's leading expert would say it's a mystery why we even have magma, where it would come from in the first place, and how it forms.
So, Bob, I know we're about out of time, but there's one more quote I wanted to read, and it's from really probably the number two most prestigious peer-reviewed journal in America, Science Journal.
In the world, the journal Science. Journal after Science. Nature and then Science.
Yep. And this quote is, "The textbook explanation for volcanism by fixed hotspots is either entirely wrong or insufficient to explain these phenomena."
Now, wait a minute, Fred. You just didn't say what you just said, did you?
Did I use the word entirely wrong?
Yeah, I think you did.
Entire, the word
entirely. And this is from the journal Science. Yeah. It's all so funny. Now, next week, part three, which we may conclude the series with, we're going to give so much evidence to back all this up.
Yeah.
From leading geologists who never seem to make it through to the public when they say, look, we've been looking at this for half a century and none of it works. So this is from 2005, and the co-authors who wrote the quote you just read, Anthony Coppers, he's Oregon State. That's another
hotbed of young earth creationism.
Another, right? And Hubert Staudigl, never heard of that last name before, Staudigl. Fred, he's a senior geophysicist at Scripps Institution of Oceanography, and at the University of California, San Diego. He's a lecturer at the Earth Science Graduate Department. So let me reread that quote.
Worth repeating.
Yes, here it is. "The textbook explanation for volcanism by fixed hotspots is either entirely wrong or insufficient to explain these phenomena." Because this is testimony contrary to interest.
Exactly.
Right? When there is someone accused of a crime and they're on the witness stand and a really good prosecutor asks them a tough question and then they give an answer that they're trying so desperately to be innocent, but their answer shows they're guilty, that's really powerful evidence contrary to interest. It's like the Bible. All these patriarchs and the leaders were so evil.
Yeah.
Their sins are all over in the pages of the Bible. And it's like testimony contrary to interest. The likelihood of it being true is overwhelmingly likely. because it makes them look so bad.
Exactly.
Why would they admit it if it were mm-hmm. not true? Like King David and the things that Abraham did and Isaac did and others mm-hmm. and Jacob. So this testimony from leading, highly credentialed, secular geophysicist and geologist strongly affirms our position as creationists that the hotspot hypothesis is false.
Yep, it's false.
So now next week, we're going to dive into some of the details as to why these scientists came to the conclusion that it's false.
Yeah, and it's real interesting stuff. It's pretty simple, actually. I think people will be surprised.
Yes.
It's not something that'll be over your heads. It's real straightforward, and it's really cool. It just totally refutes the whole thing.
Yeah, just great. So,
and it refutes plate tectonics, too. Let's throw that in.
And that's big.
Yes.
And, therefore, the creation flood model that's based on plate tectonics, which is called catastrophic plate tectonics.
Yep.
Refutes that,
it
too.
It should be RIP, as you haven't said in your video.
RIP, video. Rest in peace.
Yes.
CPT.
Yeah.
CPT, RIP. Go with HPT. Says RSR.org.
I like that.
All right, Fred. So I can't wait to the conclusion of this show next week. Part 3 should be awesome on the Hawaiian Kilauea eruption and the hotspot hypothesis. So this is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. The scholars can't explain it all away. By the handiwork of God, tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real, that's what I'm talking about.